and Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Barry Sears, and we're going to talk about several of his books, specifically Toxic Fat and the Omega Zone, specifically fish oils. How are you, Dr. Sears?
Very good, thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Forgive me if I happen to hack or cough. I'm in the South, and allergies and pollen is killing us, so please forgive me if I have to do that.
No problem.
I try not to. Okay. Before we get started, take a few minutes and tell us a little bit about you and who you are and where people can find you and how you came to be where you are.
Well, where I came to be where I am is basically started about 35 years ago when my father died of a heart attack at age 53. That's probably not too unusual for many males, but this runs my family. Everyone on the male side had died prematurely of heart disease. My father was an Olympic athlete, and he died in his early 50s. All his brothers died in their early 50s of heart disease, as did my grandfather. So I realized that basically I carried the same genes, and I couldn't change those. But I did have an opportunity to change the expression of those genes. And that led me on a long pathway, leading from MIT to Boston University Medical School to where I am today, of trying to understand how the food we eat affects the expression of our genes. And with that comes a very, very powerful tool, that is your diet, which can turn genes on and turn genes off.
So you are a medical doctor?
No, I'm a PhD. I basically have a PhD in biochemistry.
Okay, because I like to warn people, we're not trying to diagnose you and we're not trying to treat you. We're just trying to provide you with information. I have to do that to protect us. Make sure that we're okay. Okay. So, and where can people find your information on the internet?
Well, they can get information on the practicalities at my site at zonediet.com. And for the science behind that in greater detail, they can go to also drsears.com.
And that's S-E-A-R-S, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now into the questions, and I only have about 30 or so it shouldn't be too bad. First of all, what is inflammation? There's more than one kind, and it's not the typically thing that we think of when we have an infected wound.
Well, most people think of inflammation as something that hurts. That's why you see a doctor. But we now know there's a second type that's far more insidious and actually far more dangerous. And this is what I call silent inflammation. The correct medical name is chronic low-level inflammation below the perception of pain, but I just truncated it to call it silent inflammation. This silent inflammation, because there's no pain associated with it, you do nothing to stop it. And it can linger for years, if not decades, until there's enough in-organ damage. We call it diabetes, heart disease, cancer, or Alzheimer's. But they all started with a silent inflammation that didn't come from some microbial infection, but came from your diet.
So how do you get an idea that it takes maybe a decade for these things to come? How do you get an idea that you might have some type of silent inflammation?
Well, you really don't. Any more than you know what your levels of cholesterol are. I could not look at you and basically guess what your cholesterol levels are. But a blood test would tell me. And that's exactly the way you find out from silent inflammation. The only way you know it's there is there a blood test. And if you have it, then basically the sooner you find out, the quicker you can basically reverse the hands of time.
Okay. So one of the things that you use for this is fish oil. Now, is this the fish oil that we go to the grocery store and buy, or is this something different?
Well, usually what the stuff you buy at the grocery store is what I'd call the sewer of the sea. Because people are concerned about fish, because all fish in the world today are contaminated. You can run, but you can't hide. And these are contaminants we have thrown into the environment in the last two generations. Things like PCBs, mercury, dioxins, flame retardants. Now, when you basically get out fish oil from fish, guess where all those contaminants end up? In the fish oil. And so when you usually go to a health food store or the supermarket to buy fish oil capsules, you're buying those capsules with the fish oil, you're also getting a pretty heavy dose of those contaminants. So you have a real problem here that the omega-3 fatty acids found in fish oil in high enough concentrations are very powerful anti-inflammatory agents. But at the same time, if you're also taking in things like PCBs and dioxanes, you're taking one step forward and probably one and a half steps back. So
people,
the break, go ahead.
I'm sorry. For people who don't know what those things are, what are those things?
Well, those are things you don't want in your body.
Plastics and things and mercury and things like that.
Yeah, they're known neurotoxins. They're known carcinogens. Now, the breakthrough that allowed people to get rid of those came about a decade ago with the development of what are called ultra-refined EPA-DHA concentrates. Basically, they become weapons-grade fish oil, highly concentrated in the omega-3 fatty acids, but incredibly low in the toxins. Now, if you have fish oil at home, how do you know whether it's the sewer or the sea or weapons-grade? Well, here's an easy test. If you have capsules, break open three or four capsules and put them into a shot glass. Now, put that shot glass with the fish oil into the freezer and come back 5 hours later with a toothpick. If you can't put the toothpick through the fish oil, meaning it's frozen solid, you've been taking the sewer of the sea. If you can put your toothpick through the fish oil, it's probably the good stuff.
That's very interesting to know. Okay. A lot of people worry about your treatment plan calls for taking high dosages of fish oil, and I mean thousands of units a day. A lot of people worry about that oxidizing. Do you need to take tocopherols or anything with that?
Well, it's always wise when taking any of, you know, polyunsaturated fatty acid like fish oil to be taking antioxidants with it. Now, the tocopherols you find in vitamin E, they're pretty weak antioxidants. Where you find the strongest antioxidants are called polyphenols. Now, where do you find polyphenols? Those are the chemicals that give fruits and vegetables their color. And those are the chemicals that also basically prevent things from oxidizing, like the fish oil.
And that's different from polycotinol, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So what is the difference between omega-3, 6, and 9 oils? Some people think oil is oil.
Well, unfortunately, it's a little more complex than that. The omega-3 fatty acids, as I've already mentioned, these are ones in high enough concentrations are anti-inflammatory. And that's what the ones you want to have in the body. The omega-9s, these are things like olive oil, they're non-inflammatory. They're not anti-inflammatory, but they don't cause inflammation. The omega-6 fatty acids, these cause inflammation. And what's happened in America in the last 35 years, we've had a dramatic shift in the balance of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids in our diet. And in fact, we've paid for that, because we basically spend about $20 billion a year subsidizing the various crops like corn and soybean, which are incredibly rich in omega-6 fatty acids, and now things like corn oil and soybean oil are the cheapest forms of calories on the face of the earth, and basically they're ubiquitous in our society. And this is one of the reasons why our health care expenses are so high, is because we're the sickest people on the face of the earth, because we're now the most inflamed people on the face of the earth.
Does it matter that the corn and the soy are genetically modified, or is it just corn and soy pretty much straight across the board?
Corn and soy across the board. So that basically you can run, but you can't hide.
Okay. What about using natural things like the nuts, the almond nuts and things like that? Does that give you any benefit?
Well, that gives you, things like nuts usually are rich in monounsaturated fats. And here's a good rule of thumb. The more expensive the nut, the richer it is in monounsaturated fats. Now, these are not inflammatory. They're not pro-inflammatory, but they're not anti-inflammatory. So, nuts and also oils like olive oil are great sources of fats to add to your diet that won't increase the inflammation.
Okay. And does it matter if the nuts are raw or cooked?
It really basically whichever your preference. I happen to like raw almonds, but that's just my own personal preference.
Okay, so it doesn't make any difference about getting the oils, the benefit from any oil that's in there.
It really does, because the oils in nuts are pretty well protected by the nature of the nut itself from any type of cooking or things of that sort.
Okay, what are eicosanoids?
Well, these are hormones derived from omega-6 or omega-3 fatty acids. And these are the most powerful hormones known to medical science. These are the ones that basically control virtually everything in your body, because these were the first hormones ever developed by living organisms 500 million years ago. And as a consequence, every other hormone in your body is either under direct or indirect control of these eicosanoids. Now, why is that important? Because they are 100% controlled by your diet. So we go back to our earlier statement. If your number one goal is to reduce inflammation, and by doing that, change the expression of your genes, then the first thing you want to do is make less pro-inflammatory eicosanoids and make more anti-inflammatory eicosanoids. And the only drug known in the medical science that can do that is called diet.
Now, is there a particular part of your body that controls this, unlike progesterone or testosterone?
Not really. Only diet. Only diet. In fact, you know, unlike, you know, most hormones where there's a gland that makes that particular hormone, there is no eicosanoid gland in the body. In fact, every one of your 100 trillion cells can make eicosanoids. It's as if you have 100 trillion eicosanoid glands, and they're turning out these hormones 24/7, totally controlled by the food you eat.
Interesting. So, obviously, marine animals have a lot of this in them. Do you think that, and we know that fish oil is important to the brain, do you think that this has something to do with the high instincts of marine animals such as darting schools of fish? You know, how they all can tune in to something that's there that humans aren't able to really do?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when you basically take fish, you know, basically the school together and basically dart very quickly and basically put them on diets which are poor in omega-3 fatty acids, they become dumb very quickly. And the same is true of animals and humans. In fact, you can take animals and basically start taking omega-3 fatty acids out of their diet. And the first generation, they're still okay, not much differences. By the second generation, you see significant differences, and by the third generation, they are really dumb. And what's happened in America is that basically we're doing exactly the same thing. Two generations ago, your parents were made by your grandparents to take a tablespoon of cod liver oil every day. World's most disgusting food known to man. But every kid had to have a tablespoon of cod liver oil before they left the house. Probably the biggest health care disaster in America in the last century was the day the parents stopped giving their children fish oil. Now, what's happened in that time period? We've seen basically a growing epidemic of basically dumber kids who have less ability to pay attention. That's why you're seeing an outbreak of things like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Now, this is not due to bad parenting. It's just due to basically the lack of these fatty acids in the diet. And people say, well, it can't be that simple. Well, we published a study a few years ago that we took children already on their optimal dosage of drugs to treat their ADHD and put them on high-dose fish oil.
What dosage?
Well, this dosage, we were doing about 15 grams a day of omega-3 fatty acids. And we could see in a month's time that there was a dramatic improvement in their behavior and corresponding with a change in the levels of these fatty acids in the blood. And once you take them off the fatty acids, the levels of omega-3 fatty acids in their blood drop, and their behavior deteriorates within a matter of weeks.
How did their gut tolerate that?
Oh, very well. If you're using, you know, weapons-grade fish oil, if you're using basically the sewer of the sea, it's not going to happen.
Okay. So one thing I think that you're saying is we're farm-raising fish now, and they're getting grains instead of the things that they normally eat. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, they are, and that's where most of the fish oil goes, really to feeding farm-fed fish. In fact, it takes 2 pounds of wild fish to make 1 pound of farm-fed fish.
So
you're saying the economics of that is just unsustainable, which it is.
So everybody talks about, oh, I eat fish 3 times a week, but they're eating farm-raised fish, so they're not getting what they think they're getting, right?
And more importantly, what they're getting is basically a much higher dosage of those toxins than you would in normal fish.
So what is the difference between DHA? When you look at a fish oil bottle on the back, it says DHA EPA 2000. But that's not really what it is it? What is the difference between, and how do we know what we're taking?
Well, let's go to the first one, the difference between the two fatty acids. Both are omega-3 fatty acids. They do different things in the body. The EPA is a very, very powerful anti-inflammatory fatty acid. So if you want to control inflammation, you've got to have adequate levels of EPA. The DHA is more of a structural fatty acid that's critical for the brain. So you really want to cover your bets. You want both of those. So when you basically say, see a fish oil capsule says contains EPA and DHA, that's probably good. Now all the question is, how much does it contain? You made the example saying a fish oil capsule saying contains EPA and DHA and it contains 2,000 milligrams. Well, that's 2,000, that's 2 grams. But of that 2,000 or 2,000 milligrams, only a very small percentage might actually be the EPA or DHA.
It's fillers, right?
Well, it's other fatty acids that come along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Remember I talked about weapons-grade fish oil where you're concentrating it up? By concentrating it, you're taking out a lot of the other fatty acids that just take up space.
So how do we find out? Where do we get a quality fish oil to take?
Well, you're not going to find it in a health food store. You're not going to find it in a supermarket. One place I would recommend people, if they're interested in high-quality fish oil, there's a free website. It's called ifosprogram.com. IFOS is IFOS program. The IFOS stands for International Fish Oil Standards. And this is run by a university in Canada that basically analyzes fish oils using the most sophisticated technology available today. And after they do that, they rank the fish oils with stars, just like you'd rank a wine. You can have a screw cap mm-hmm. wine and a really good wine. Guess what? Guess what? One tastes better than the other. Mm-hmm. And so you can go to that website and find what they call 5-star fish oils, which have high potency and high purity.
I have to tell you, when I first read your book, I went through all of the vitamin, well, I won't say all of them, but a lot of the vitamin places on Puritan's Pride, Vitacost, all of those. And I called their labs and said, can you tell me how much EPA and DHA is in each one of your capsules? Nobody knew. Nobody had any idea.
And that's one of the really frightening aspects that people are convinced, and rightfully so, that if I can take more fish oil, that basically I have a better chance in terms of quality of life. But the fact is, what I'm taking, I don't have a clue, and nor does the manufacturer, what's actually in there.
So what about people who have cytokine storms? I mean, everybody's having those nowadays for various reasons. Does it help that?
Well, cytokines are...
And if you would say what that is, because my listeners may not know what that is.
Cytokines are inflammatory proteins. Again, they're made by every cell in the body. And what activates them is the most primitive part of our immune system, and the part we share of plants. And this part of our immune system is very, very affected by the diet. So if you have a pro-inflammatory diet, basically a diet that's causing inflammation, that's going to turn on every cell in your body to basically make more and more of these inflammatory cytokines. And what do cytokines do? They make you sick. They make you tired. And basically that's what happens when you basically now have higher and higher levels of inflammation in the body. You get sick and you get tired.
So would the fish oils help that?
They are part of the problem, are part of the solution. The real solution goes back to the diet. And that's why you can't talk about fish oil. They're very, very powerful, but they're not a magic bullet all by itself. What you really want to do is develop an anti-inflammatory diet. And to do that, the first thing you have to do is reduce the building block that makes these pro-inflammatory eicosanoids. Which, and there's two ways you can do that in your diet. One, you got to pull out omega-6 fatty acids. Easier said than done in America, because we are the world's biggest producer of these omega-3 fatty acids, and they are found in every product in America.
Why don't you say what they are so people will...
Well, every time
know.
You basically see something that says soybean oil or corn oil or sunflower oil or even safflower oil, these are all fatty acids or vegetable oils very rich in omega-6 fatty acids. Every time you go to the market and go down the aisles and buy a processed food, it contains those same omega-6 fatty acids.
Okay.
Which means they're everywhere. And now what happens, if you also have a diet that's rich in carbohydrates, which the American diet is also, it makes the hormone insulin, and when you have high levels of insulin and high levels of omega-6 fatty acids, they basically, it's like adding kerosene to a fire. Now they form what I call toxic fat. This is basically called, it's arachidonic acid, but I'll contract it to toxic fat, because in high concentrations, that fatty acid kills, and kills by increasing the levels of inflammation in your body.
I'm going to give you a good portion of time to talk specifically about your diet, by the way. I just had some questions that I was curious about. So don't think I'm going to leave that out. What is the role of neurotransmitters and fish oils? And by that I mean serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, those type neurotransmitters.
Well, let's focus on the first two, serotonin and dopamine. If you're depressed, what most people, and 20 million people in America, take antidepressant drugs, what they do, those drugs increase the levels of serotonin, and you feel happier. In fact, they've done studies with Prozac, one of those type of drugs, with normal people, and they take Prozac, they feel even happier. So it's kind of like a happy hormone. However, high levels of fish oil can basically increase that same level of that neurotransmitter. And that's why fish oils are being used as one of the primary treatments now in depression, whether it be unipolar or bipolar depression. Now, the hormone, or the neurotransmitter dopamine, that's the one that gives you a sense of reward. And this is the hormone that basically that people become addicted to. If you're basically taking cocaine, why do you take it? Because it increases the levels of dopamine. But the same is true of sugar. Sugar increases levels of dopamine. And obviously sugar is actually is more addictive than cocaine, but more socially acceptable. One other thing increases levels of dopamine, the same omega-3 fatty acids. And that's why they're used very effectively in treating conditions like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and also Parkinson's.
Now, at this point, I'd like to talk about amino acids a little bit. Is there, because I know that serotonin and dopamine need certain amino acids, and there's even some talk around now about a liver enzyme called BH4 that helps you, reuptake the serotonin. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know much about BH4. But I do know the uptake and release and uptake of the neurotransmitters depends on basically the fluidity of the synaptic membrane. These are the membranes that basically when two neurons meet, that's called the synapse. And the fluidity of that membrane controls the uptake and release of these neurotransmitters. And what controls that fluidity is the amount of omega-3 fatty acids in your brain.
So there's also a new study that I recently saw somewhere that if you give your child high doses of fish oil before they get, I don't know, really set in depression, that you can actually cure it or alleviate it. I don't know the right word for that.
Well, I would say basically prevent basically its expression. What happens if you don't have adequate levels of these fatty acids? And that's why they're called essential fatty acids. The body cannot make them. They have to be part of the diet. And if they are not part of the diet and you have a genetic predisposition toward depression, then in the absence of adequate levels, that predisposition will be expressed. So what you're looking to do is basically to minimize the likelihood of those genetic markers or genetic phenotypes being expressed, not using a drug, but using your diet.
What about, and I know I'm going to come back to this in a minute, but what about the myelin sheath? Does it help protect the myelin sheath?
Well, it does. The myelin sheath is basically your insulation that allows neurons to basically send their messages back and forth with pretty good fidelity. And what happens, disease that most people are aware of, multiple sclerosis, what happens, the myelin sheath becomes inflamed, and what happens? You basically lose the ability to communicate back and forth effectively. That's why these omega-3 fatty acids are very useful as anti-inflammatory agents inside the brain to basically quell the inflammation that's associated with the multiple sclerosis.
So it seems like it would also be beneficial for neuropathies and myopathies, maybe.
And those are some of the studies we're working on right now in terms of diabetic neuropathy, which is an incredibly painful condition for those who have that, especially diabetics. That's why it's known as diabetic neuropathy, because it's commonly associated with diabetes.
So I wanted to ask you to go back to your family history of heart disease. What kind of heart disease ran in your family?
Well, no one's really too sure. Just about everyone just died prematurely about age 50.
Did they have heart attacks or strokes, or did they have clogged arteries? What happened to them?
Well, I'll use my father as an example. He died with his third heart attack at age 53. His first one was age 39.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So did he have hypercholesterolemia with it?
At the time, nobody's doing any testing for it because the test didn't exist, so really no one knows.
Does this help? Will fish oils or long-chain omega-3 additives help high cholesterol?
Well, they won't really help high cholesterol that much, because cholesterol has nothing to do with heart disease.
Okay.
It never has, never will. The number one drug we have for treating a heart attack or preventing it remains an aspirin, and it does not lower cholesterol one iota. What it does do, it lowers inflammation. And it turns out the drugs that most people take, they're called statin drugs, they were not the first drugs to lower cholesterol. In fact, they were the 20th drug. But the first 19 that all lowered cholesterol actually increased deaths from heart disease. So why would the statins lower cholesterol and, for the first time, lower mortality? Well, it turns out, unbeknownst to anybody, statins were also an anti-inflammatory drug.
So why would somebody prefer to use a statin instead of, say, something like niacin or red yeast rice?
Because first of all, usually the doctor says take it, and people basically rarely question their doctor. Red rice, basically does contain actually one of the first statins. Is known as lovastatin. The other name was called Nevacor, which is the trade name. And basically that's where it was first isolated from.
Interesting.
So you could take something like red yeast rice. But the fact is that, you say, am I taking too much or too little?
Mm-hmm.
The fact is you don't know. And the fact is statins are a unique drug because it's the only drug known in the medical science that can raise the levels of toxic fat. And so you have a problem here. Each time I lower cholesterol, I'm raising the levels of toxic fat, and this is why cardiologists, they love statins, but neurologists hate them. Cardiologists like them because the cholesterol goes down. Neurologists don't like them because the cholesterol goes down, and one of the primary side effects of statins is loss of short-term memory.
Interesting. I can see that in people that I know that are like that. That makes a lot of sense now. So I'm going to ask you some questions that's away from the fish oil sometimes, just because I'm interested. I know that people who have gallbladder and bile issues have sometimes connected to heart disease and high cholesterol. What do you know about that, and maybe using something like beetroot juice, or do you know about that?
Well, again, when you have a gallbladder problem, or basically a decreased output of bile, it's bile that basically is required to help solubilize fats, any fat, to be absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have basically a gallbladder problem, you're just not putting up enough bile, and therefore you can't absorb the fats, and now they hang around all the wrong spots. So things like beet juice, they might be useful as an adjunct to help solubilize the fats, but they really will not make up for the lack of bile salts, which really helps solubilize the fats so they can be broken down and absorbed by the body.
So how would you help that? How would you support that?
Well, what you would do, you just make sure you Well, naturally, just eat small amounts of fat at every meal. Otherwise, you overload the system.
Okay. What about lowering blood pressure? How does fish oil help lower blood pressure? And is there anything you need to take in conjunction with it, any nutrient or supplement?
Well, the thing that basically increases blood pressure turn out to be those inflammatory eicosanoids, because they're vasoconstrictors. They constrict the blood vessels, and hence your blood pressure goes up. So basically, what's the best way to lower blood pressure? Basically have more vasodilators, and basically the best way to do that is by having enough fish oil, because that basically causes more production of the anti-inflammatory eicosanoids that basically make blood pressure go down.
Now, I know there's, I think, three or four kinds of blood pressure. Will it work for all of the kinds?
It depends on
high blood pressure. Sorry.
Yeah, the high blood pressure, the garden variety, it works very effectively. If you have essential hypertension, which is basically a lot of problems, it might not work as effectively, but it can't hurt you. It can only help you.
Okay. Does fish oil cross the blood-brain barrier?
Yes, it does. In fact, it's one of the few things that can cross the blood-brain barrier. The reason we have that there is because it prevents things from getting into the brain, like drugs, which is a pretty good thing, because once they're in there, they don't leave. But that's why drugs are not very effective for treating neurological disorders. But on the other hand, as far as the blood-brain barrier goes, these omega-3 fatty acids, there is none, because they just go right across there, like basically cutting warm butter with a knife. And so now if you have an inflammatory problem in the brain, you have multiple sclerosis, you have Parkinson's, you have depression, you have ADHD, you have Alzheimer's, and you want to get basically an anti-inflammatory compound across there, fish oils are your best bet.
Interesting. So what about if we're taking the sea sludge kind? Does the sludge go across the blood-brain barrier with it?
It sure does.
Ooh.
Yes, right. And you put that together very quickly. Say, if you got the bad things in the fish oil, which are soluble in the fish oil, and the fish oil can cross there, they can too. And that's why I tell people that, you know, these cheap fish oils, basically it's, you know, you're really playing a game of Russian roulette.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you know what DMSO is?
Yes.
Would there be, for somebody who had a serious condition somewhere, would there be any advantage to putting fish oil on your skin and using DMSO to carry it through?
I don't think so. And the reason why, because that, you know, the body is pretty efficient in absorbing fish oil. And more importantly, that's the way it gets in the natural way and gets reassembled as triglycerides and then enters the bloodstream and the circulation, so it can now travel and basically be effectively, you know, interact with all of your 100 trillion cells.
What about people who have leaky gut syndrome? Will they get what they're needing out of it, or will they need to take more?
Well, if they have leaky gut syndrome, by and large, what they have inflammation of the gut. And so the fish oil becomes a very, very effective way of reducing that inflammation, and therefore basically becomes their primary tool of healing that leaky gut syndrome.
Kid, why would we take fish oil instead of using barrage oil or flaxseed oil or something like that?
Well, let's look at basically flaxseed oil. Flaxseed oil does contain omega-3 fatty acids, but they're short-chain omega-3 fatty acids. And unfortunately, in humans, their conversion to the long-chain ones that do all the heavy lifting is incredibly inefficient and slow. So I need 50 to 100 times the volume of flaxseed oil to get the same anti-inflammatory benefits of a much smaller volume of fish oil. Now, what about borage oil? Borage oil, it contains the omega-6 fatty acids, but they're more activated. It means they're kind of rolling down toward toxic fat. So of borage oil, in small amounts, can be helpful. In large amounts, it can be actually, in many ways, a very potentially dangerous nutrient, because you now can make more higher levels of toxic fat.
And does it have some kind of hormonal reaction from it as well?
Well, the hormonal reaction, if you make toxic fat, then you're going to make more inflammatory eicosanoids.
Okay. All right. So, let's see. Oh, what about algae?
Well, algae do make omega-3 fatty acids, but they're in very low concentrations. So if I want to eat about 10 pounds of algae per day, I might get adequate levels.
Okay. What is the role of enzymes in synthesizing fatty acids? Do we need to supplement them? And if we did, what would we supplement?
No, actually, the enzymes to make fatty acids or to elongate fatty acids are found in every cell in the body. And if you supplement with enzymes, they're going to be broken down in the gut and into amino acids, so they won't do you much good in the first place. But the fatty acids, once they're in the body, the enzymes required to make these longer-chain fatty acids and to make the eicosanoids from them are found in every cell in the body.
Okay. But so you don't think that it's important to use them to help digest it?
No. The best thing you do to help digest things is do what your grandmother told you. Chew 25 times.
Okay. Now, what about methionine and the breaking down of omega-3s? Does that have any place?
No, it really doesn't. The omega-3 fatty acids are either basically stored in the body as fat, made into eicosanoids, or burned as energy and broken down to CO2 and water.
Okay. Now, we know that some of our fish oil, well, most of our fish oils have a lot of heavy metals. Is there any reason that we would need to use a chelator to get those out and to start over using healthy ones?
No. Zinc
or something.
Your best aspect is, you know, follow the old computer rule, garbage in, garbage out. So try to basically use the best quality products to take in the least amount of contaminants, which means the body will be able to get, you know, basically not be overloaded with the efforts to remove them.
How does it get out heavy metals? I thought that once they get inside the cell, particularly, you know, stored in the fat, that it was hard to get it out.
Well, that's right. And that's why that, you know, chelators really don't work that well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they tend to basically, once a heavy metal, especially mercury, is the culprit, it gets into the body, it basically interacts with sulfur-containing amino acids and forms a covalent bond, which is almost impossible to get rid of. So you've got some heavy lifting ahead of you, and even chelation, even given intravenously, will basically pull very little of that material out of the system.
Okay. So I have something called dysautonomia. Have you ever heard of that?
Just enough of it to basically be dangerous.
Yeah, me too. Do you know, does fish oil do anything for the autonomic nervous system?
Well, anything with the nervous system, fish oil is going to be an important component. So the fact is that if you have a problem that has a neurological component, taking high levels of purified fish oil can only help the problem and definitely cannot worsen it.
Are there any side effects to fish oil, like thinning blood or detoxing, that someone should need to be aware of?
Well, again, it depends on the purity of the fish oil. The more pure the fish oil, the less aspect of side effects. Even in the area of if you're taking blood thinning medication, if people are taking blood thinning medication and are interested in basically adding fish oil to the diet, I would tell them to basically start with a low dosage, and then basically check with their doc, look at their prothrombin times. Because bleeding is a very, very complex phenomenon. And it's been the case in the literature that the people taking blood-thinning medications sometimes need to decrease them or not change them or actually even increase them. So the story is still out in that. But if you're under about 3 grams a day, I would not worry about that one iota.
Okay. Are there any medications or dietary supplements that you know of that you shouldn't mix the two with?
I would say no, and that's not being Pollyannish. The fact that the only known side effect of fish oil is that it makes you smart.
I can stand that.
As far as supplements go, remember it's a food. It's not a supplement. A supplement's defined as a nutrient that has no calories. Well, fish oils are a nutrient, but they have calories, so they're a food. So they're unique in that aspect. But again, can you have different qualities of fish oil? Yes, you can. It's the contaminants that you're worried about.
Okay, I have one more question that's kind of outside your book, and that is there an importance of taking C, D3, or your B vitamins, particularly niacin, for treating heart disease with your fish oil?
I think on a scale of 1 to 10, I'll give supplements like, you know, vitamin D and B vitamins. I'll give them a 2. You know, they're okay. They're better than nothing. I'll give fish oil a 12.
Okay. Now, every person that I talk to, everybody almost says, oh, I take a fish oil every day. Is that going to do them any good to take a fish oil every day?
It can't hurt them.
What I want to know is, when you're really trying to treat chronic or acute inflammation, you're really talking about some dosages.
You really are. And that's why what you're looking to do is saying, and the data is pretty clear on this, that the levels required to really reduce significant levels of inflammation are high. And this is the basic thing about all natural products. They can work. They work on the same drug targets that drugs do with a much lower side effect profile, but you have to use higher dosages. If you give a therapeutic dose, you get therapeutic effects. You give placebo dose, you get placebo effects.
What kind of doses are you typically talking about?
Well, it depends on what type of inflammation you have and where it's located. Let's say you have your normal weight and you have no chronic disease.
Let's not use normal weight. Nobody's normal weight any day.
All right, let's say you have no chronic disease. And so you need probably about 2.5 grams of omega-3 fatty acids per day. Now, let's put that into perspective. When your grandparents gave your parents a tablespoon of cod liver oil, that was 2.5 grams of omega-3 fatty acids. But let's say you basically have more inflammation. Let's say you're fat, you have diabetes, or you have heart disease. You'll probably need double that dosage. And what if you no longer have silent inflammation, but now you've got screaming pain? Pain coming from rheumatoid arthritis or cancer pain. You'll probably need about 3 times that dosage. And what if you have the inflammation inside the brain? You have ADHD, you have Parkinson's, you've got multiple sclerosis. You'll need probably even higher levels. So you see, these are fairly high levels, and that's why the purity becomes so important to make sure if you're getting these omega-3 fatty acids, you're not taking in large amounts of toxins, which can be very, very hard to get out of the body once they get in there.
So if you're taking 12,000 milligrams, or let's say 3 grams to 4 grams a day, do you take it all at one time, or do you spread it out throughout the day, and why would you do whatever it is you choose?
Well, you could take it all at one time, because the half-life, that means how long it stays in the body, is about 2 days, which means you can take it once a day. Vitamins, the half-life is measured now in hours, which means you should take them 3 times a day to maintain a steady levels in the bloodstream. So you can take them all at one time, or you can split it throughout the day, whichever is most convenient for you.
Okay. All right. It's 8:45. I'm going to give you time to talk about what you want to talk about, like your diet and any other thing that we've not talked about that you feel is important. We have about 10 or 12 minutes.
The important thing is basically looking to control inflammation. You know, the more we know now about this inflammatory process, we know now it's really the underlying cause of all chronic disease. It's also the underlying cause of the aging process. So if we really basically, we've made medicine a lot more complex than it really is. If you can control inflammation, you've gone a great distance to controlling your future, because it's the inflammation that basically allows you to turn genes on or turn genes off. And now the inflammation that we talk about is induced by the diet, but it can also be corrected by the diet. The fish oil is just the easiest aspect. The fish oil does not reduce, it's the levels of toxic fat in your body that cause inflammation. The fish oil will not reduce the levels of toxic fat.
So what do we cook with?
Well, what you cook with are things which are non-inflammatory, like olive oil.
Okay.
But
not canola oil.
Canola oil has maybe double the levels of omega-6 fats compared to olive oil, and of soybean oil has 5 times the omega-6 fats compared to olive oil.
What about peanut oil?
Peanut oil has about 4 times the number.
Okay, so stick with olive oil, I guess.
Stick with olive oil, or basically you might even want to think about things which have even lower levels of omega-6 fatty acids.
Like what?
Like butter.
Really?
Yes. But butter has, and butter has in very, very low levels of omega-6 fatty acids.
I'm surprised to hear that. I didn't know that.
Well, see, most Americans aren't, and say, wow, I mean, and butter tastes a lot better than these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, if you're using, again, always use fats. How much? A dash. What's a dash? A small amount. But you're looking for fats which are low in omega-6 fatty acids. Now, the butter has rich in saturated fats compared to the olive oil, so olive oil remains the best, but butter is not a bad second choice.
So have you done any work with, any clinical work with anybody that's had some really profound results that didn't want to believe it would happen?
Well,
your
remember, I'll give one example. Remember about 4 years ago, there was the big mine disaster in West Virginia?
Yeah.
When the 12 miners or 13 miners were trapped and they finally broke through and they found one miner just barely alive?
Yes.
Well, that was my patient. So they brought him out, and I got a call that night from his neurosurgeon. And he said, I've just been on the phone with the governor of West Virginia. He's saying, I cannot let this man die. He says, what do we do? I said, well, let's give him some omega-3 fatty acids. He said, well, how much? Well, we just finished our study for our kids with ADHD. I said, how about 15 grams a day? He said, oh, my God, he'll bleed to death. I said, he's not going to bleed to death. So we airmailed several bottles of our oil down to West Virginia and started feeding the miner through his feeding tube. Now, when they brought him out of the mine, he had heart failure, he had kidney failure, he had liver failure, and he had brain failure. Because when they did an MRI, there was no white matter in the brain. It had all been destroyed completely. So the man was basically, his likelihood of surviving was slim. If he did, he'd probably end up being a vegetable the rest of his life. So he started feeding the 15 grams of fish oil down his feeding tube every day for 2 months. And after 2 months, he came out of his coma.
Imagine.
And we kept on feeding him the fish oil, and 2 months later, he went home. Now, when he went home, he had, you know, his heart was normal, his kidney was normal, his liver was normal, and he gave a press conference worthy of any Italian politician.
So now, I have a little boy who's 10, who has ADHD. Not terrible, but enough that it drives me personally crazy, and it can drive the teacher crazy sometimes. And he's little and he's skinny. How much should I give him? How much should you give a little kid like that?
Well, a little kid was the same little kids we were working with at Harvard, and probably about 10 grams a day.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else that you can think of?
Well, again, like I said, you know, your goal is reducing inflammation. The fish oil dilutes it out, but your number one goal is you got to watch your diet. And basically, here's all the rules you need to basically control your inflammation by the diet for the rest of your life. And all you need is a hand and an eye. And here's what you do. At every meal, divide your plate into three equal sections. On one-third of the plate, you put some low-fat protein that's no bigger or thicker than the palm of your hand. And the other two-thirds of the plate, you fill it full of colorful carbohydrates. What are those? They're called fruits and vegetables. And then you finally add a dash of non-inflammatory monounsaturated fat, like olive oil. And what you've composed now is a drug, very, very powerful drug, to reduce the levels of toxic fat in your body. The only secret is do that the best you can the rest of your life.
Tell us the name of your books, please, and where to find them.
My newest book is called Toxic Fat, and that's found in every bookstore, and you can always find it at Amazon.com. As you can probably all my other books, which now that's my 12th book I've written on this whole subject of how food affects our hormones.
Now, you're a neuro researcher, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to ask you something totally off the wall because I've been doing a research project on mind. I'd like your definition about what is mind.
Well, mind is basically a very interesting thing because it's different than the brain. You know, everything we do in life is basically made of constructs. And what we don't understand, we call it, something else. Probably the it's a, you know, probably the best way to describe it is that of the mind is well out there that things we can't really pick up and basically quantify, but exist. Let me use the best area in terms of medicine. That is the placebo effect. That basically, if you're given a placebo, about one-third of the time, you will always get better. It's all about belief. And if you believe something will help you, invariably it does.
Where does it reside?
Well, where it resides is basically the same place where energy resides. So when you tell me what energy is, I can tell you what the mind is.
Good answer.
And so they're both out there someplace. But basically, you know, we perceive and we make constructs of what we allow them to navigate through the world. But our perceptions are colored by how we basically want to put constraints. So one of the biggest problems we have to realize that the life we live is only part of the life that's out there. And your goal is try to basically find a continuity. And one of the best things I tell people, one of the best parts of medicine is just find a comfortable chair and sit in it for 20 minutes and try to think of nothing. And that's hard work. It's very hard work.
It really is. I practice that. It really can be.
But
yeah.
But what it does, it basically allows you to basically realize that, you know, in stillness, and that's really that whole unwashed area, in stillness lies much of the answers.
So I'm going to ask you two questions here. As we've got about three minutes or four maybe. I'd like to know, I'm going to ask them both. Does brain think or does brain process? And then what is your definition of consciousness?
Well, again, let's start with the last one. In consciousness, it's of, you know, this is basically still being debated and all, and it will be for probably the next, 20 millennia. Consciousness is what you're aware of. It's the unconsciousness which is out there. And so things we're aware of, we basically make a story about. The things we're not aware of, we tend to ignore. The more you're able to basically try to tap into that unconscious, to be aware, the more you basically see of a really kind of a oneness and realize that, for the grace of God, but goes I. That's saying, I look at this chair across my room here and say, you know, basically there's a certain degree of oneness between myself and the chair. I'm aware and the chair's not. But so this aspect of consciousness of what you're aware of and basically how you basically use that to perceive the world, it's becoming explored bits and pieces, but it's coming as much from the world of theology as it is from the world of, you know, quantum mechanics.
Exactly. I love it. It's my passion. Do you think that consciousness is in gradients?
Oh, I think so.
And we got about a minute or two left. Do you have any comment about how those gradients express themselves?
Well,
that makes sense.
It does. It basically, everything is always relative. So that you're looking at, in physics, it's called zero point energy, which is really where most of the energy in the universe resides in. In terms of physics, we know about 5% of the matter in the universe we can account for. The other 95% we can't. And the other 95% falls in that gray area we're trying to basically understand, and that's where the consciousness and the gradients, being able to understand and tap into the other 95% of the universe, is our, you know, really the goals we have for the future.
Do you think that there's that mass really exists, or do you think it just all boils down to smaller and smaller and smaller particles to the irreducible unit?
Well, you get down to the smaller and smaller particles, and now basically you have energy. Now, like I said earlier, once you know what energy is,
mm-hmm.
you know what the universe is.
Oh, I just thought I could interview you another hour about this. Wish I'd have known. I should have called you earlier.
Who knew? Who knew?
I might have you back if you'll talk about that. I love it. It's my passion. Okay, tell us your website where people can find you.
Again, zonediet.com and also drsears.com.
Thank you, Dr. Sears. I've so enjoyed having you on my show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Good night.
Take care now.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.